That extra 11 hours a day, a weekend, by getting here at 5:30.
I get called over to the House Committee on Energy, Environment, and Water. We have members under a tight time frame this afternoon as things get busy all over this building, and we're going to run through our agenda fairly quickly today. We're going to start with the informational session on the ESA, the Energy Special Assessments. I'll open that. Representative Reed, kick it off with you, unless you would prefer otherwise. You're first on our agenda. And just for the committee members, and I'll allow my co-chair to chime in here, please. I think the notion that we had some discussion in this committee related to the ESA, partially in connection with the Representative Bailey's bill more broadly on the department, and then there were a lot of other discussions taking place around the same time about how this assessment works, how it might ought to work, and I know Representative Reed had some suggestions about ways we might modify it, and the co-chair and I were interested in hearing more about that as we consider this as a possible topic for interim work.
Great idea. I think that's a good summary. I think our colleague here, Representative Reed, has an opinion on everything. He's a good person to have come, and I'm glad he's here.
Tobias, don't make him make you move.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative. No, it's always good to have the director here, and Chair Gilliam, remember that the opinion is worth what you paid for it. I'm Tobias Reed, State Representative for District 27, and if, through permission, Mr. Chair, I would suggest there might be some benefit in having the director kind of tee things up.
Yeah, great. So it looks like you're prepared for an overview.
Mr. Chairman.
Sounds perfect.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, for the record, I am Bob Repine, Acting Director for the Department of Energy. I have prepared just a brief overview to keep in compliance with what you've asked, Mr. Chair, on the energy supplier assessment budget notes that we accommodated from last biennium. And there we go. During the 2009 legislative session, the energy supplier assessment, ESA, payers and stakeholders moved to request increased restrictions on the use of the funds provided to the department. As a result of that, the 75th Oregon Legislative Assembly, last assembly, directed the department through a budget note to work with the stakeholders group to determine activities appropriate funded with ESA and to develop policies on ending balances and collections of ESA funds. This chart, bar chart, gives you an idea of the ratio of the funds that we are collecting today versus what the law permits. In the revised statutes 460.421, this is the section of the law that provides for the collection of these resources from utilities, independent power producers, fuel suppliers to fund department activities as required by law, which do not have an alternative source of funding. As you can see, the ratio is based on the annual gross operating revenues derived in Oregon relative to the total revenue of all energy suppliers in the state. So the current law in statute allows the agency to charge up to 0.5% on this fee. Currently, the fee is 0.069%.
And Mr. Repin, when was the fee established at this 0.5% rate? It's interesting to me that it's so out of sync with the actual rate.
Yes.
It suggests it's a holdover from some.
And I'll get to that if you mind.
Okay, yeah,
the
great.
Next slide, I'll probably tell that story relatively well to you.
Okay.
So again, this chart, sorry for the small numbers at the bottom, but it shows going back to 1981. Now, I don't know if that's the beginning point of this assessment, but we can clearly see that it has gone back nearly 30 years at this point in time. The statute directs the annual assessment of the rate to be set at a level to fund the Department of Energy's legislative authorized budget after other funding sources are taken into account. The ESA rate has varied over time. However, increased gross energy sales and the commitment to stakeholders to keep the rate consistent over the last two bienniums, you can see on this chart. And again, if you remember, the number at maximum is 0.5%. So even in this 30-year snapshot, you can see that the rate has not deviated much greater than where we are today. Probably if you go back to 1982, it looks like that might have been a comparable year on the percentage. It has dipped in other years to a lower number, about looks like 0.04. But again, it's been in that range over this period of time. For you to have a better understanding how the ESA program works, I've thrown this slide into you not to confuse you, but actually kind of lay out to the department, begin to remember the way the funds are used. It's used as a funding source after all other funds come into the agency from other funding activities that we have that are not general funded. So in the this organizational chart, and I'm going to go through this briefly for you. The director's office has 11 positions, which includes the government relations, communications, human services, internal auditing, deputy director as well. The next, on the first column on your left, is the energy policy division, where there's 28 positions in this. Includes coordination of various policy groups, research, technical services, and various conservation programs, such as the State Energy Efficiency Design, better known as SEED program. And this is also where Senate Bill 1149 school program resides within the department for the school element component of that piece of legislation. The next column over is Energy Development Services. This is 35 staff in total. This is where all the BETSI programs are run, the ARA program runs, and our SELP loan program runs as well. Smaller ones going to the center now is, and going out to the right, is our nuclear program, which has six positions, which does the nuclear oversight for cleanup and coordinates for state petroleum contingency planning. Next column to the second to the right is the energy siting. This is coordinates energy siting and certifies compliance with activities across the state. And finally is our central service, which is 29 people, which is the shared administrative services for the agency through all aspects of the work that we do in all those categories that I've mentioned prior. And why I wanted to share this next slide to you and tee it up with the organizational chart is this slide shows you that, in effect, I have to tell you, every portion of my agency takes some element of the ESA funds. But the larger ones you will notice are the energy policy group is the technical policy people, and then director's office. So if you, in the past biennium, the current biennium we're in today, 70-80% of the funding expenditures in the last three bienniums, ESA has been issued 70-80% to fund staffing expenditures where no alternative funding sources are available. And generally, that would be in the energy policy, in the director's office, in those categories under those titles. 10% of the funding has been historically used for energy facility siting. And siting activities cannot directly be associated with a specific siting project, so we have the ability to generally bill for our services for siting, but if there is some element that you can't relate directly back to a particular application, then ESA helps pay for that. And then somewhere in the range of 5-20% of the funds have been used for special projects, which include investments in information on technology and data systems, research, event sponsorship, and general other activities, sometimes associated both by the legislature and the governor's office. In the current biennium, as we're getting ready to the 11-13 budget, our plan is 90% of the ESA to staffing because the budget anticipates losses in revenues resulting from the sunset of the tax programs, so more money will be required to be used of the ESA funds to offset that. 5% of it will be used toward facility siting. We're changing our billing processes to allow more direct billing to the applicants in the siting program. And we were going to reduce down to 6% in special projects that we currently have been practicing in the past. And this also includes the deployment of the Governor's School Initiative, better known as House Bill 2960. The working with the stakeholders, we came up with some agreements as the budget note required us to have. Stakeholder group also looked at existing policies and discussed appropriate ending balances with us. This led to the department drafting a new management funding policy. And those documents were included in electronic files that were sent to you earlier, which were a combination of the report, if you have seen that earlier. The Department of Energy also affirmed that with the stakeholders that future ESA calculations will be based on legislative approved expenditures, gross sale trends, and ending balance targets. So the final slide that I have here in front of you now is the fund management policy was reviewed and added as a result of this process, and so that was part of the budget note and the work that was done accomplished with the stakeholders. We have established an ongoing advisory committee to ensure that continued stakeholder involvement through a transparency process and open discussions. And the Department of Energy advanced Senate Bill 167 to focus on ESA expenditures on energy-specific issues, and the bill today still remains in committee.
Mr. Repine, before you can... Ah, perfect.
There you go.
Representative Gilliam has a question.
Question.
Nice timing, Director Repine. I want to go back for a second. Tell me a little bit more about the stakeholder advisory group.
Uh-huh.
You've established it. It's ongoing. What does that mean? Who's on and when you meet?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative. In the again, I'm going to refer back to the budget report that we have shared with you electronically. In there, you find a list of those organizations who have participated, who have been participating with us. We've only actually had two stakeholder meetings, and the purpose of that stakeholder meeting was to have these discussions in order to meet the requirements of the budget note. But we will, and of course, we have ongoing discussions with this group in various other advisory group capacities that I have put together. But the intent is, as soon as assembly is over, we will get back at meeting with them regularly, talking about, because again, if you remember, it relies on the end budget, the budget that comes from this assembly, and we'll have to go through the determination of what that means to them as far as the total amount of money that's going to be needed to them. So we'll have some discussions. We'll talk about where we anticipate spending it in this coming biennium, where we're making changes, how we're trying to address some of the leakage on use of ESA and other activities that I think we can be more accountable for them. So it'll be an ongoing process. Again, on attachment A on page 7 in the report, you can find some of their names. And then I would also point to your attention that I did circulate, I think we circulated to you earlier, a copy of the list of the individuals or the companies, corporations that participate in this program with us. Two-pager, you'll see. There's 61 companies today that participate in the fee, the program with us. And just to give you an idea, the largest one is $1.16 million from Pacific Portland General Electric, and the smallest one is Columbia Rural Electric for $251. So it is everything from millions of dollars to hundreds of dollars on their proportion amount that they pay on their fees based on their gross sales.
Follow-up.
Tell me a little bit more about the names again, because it's not matching with what I've got up here.
The names of who, sir?
On that advisory. You said that...
Oh. Well...
it's maybe my mistake. I'm not looking in the right page or something.
Thank you. Page 7 on the report itself, dated December 2010. Representatives from Portland General Electric, Miller Nash, Oregon People's Utility District Association, Natural Gas, Avista Corporation, Strategies 360, Portland General Electric again, Miller Nash, Strategies 360.
Okay. So, for just to interrupt for a second.
Yes, please.
Committee members, I don't know if you have yours in front of you. Thank you for pointing me to the right report. I'm looking at the Energy Supplier Assessment Budget Note Report, December 2010. I don't know if everybody's got that. That's what we're referring to, in case you're trying to follow along. Continue to follow up.
Yep, just go right ahead.
Thank you. So we got the group. When you referred to, we've got to see what the budget is here before you can readdress the group. Are you meaning how much money you'll have for the group to meet or for them to be involved in planning process for the department or the different divisions?
Mr. Chairman, representative committee members, the purpose of a meeting in the post session would be to have a final amount of money built into our budget, so then we can determine where our other resources or alternative resources will be coming from. So then we can, through that process, make a determination of how much supplement or funds would have to be raised via this supplemental fee that's charged to the energy suppliers.
And that couldn't happen until we get through
Correct.
This session. And my last follow-up on this, Mr. Chair, is regarding the budget note, then I want to go back to the other part of the budget note, which is legislation to define what activities are appropriately funded by the ESA.
How would you answer that? I mean, how do you hook up to the that legislative part?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, committee members, I think the best way to answer that question would be the fact that we introduced the Senate bill in this assembly, and there was also a House version of it, too. Neither one of those bills have moved through the committees at this point in time. So there, it was a bill that was worked on with the stakeholders, submitted on behalf of the department in the governor's budget process, and was submitted to the assembly for consideration, and the bill has not moved.
Numbers, do you happen to know them? It's okay if you don't. I can't remember my bill number.
The number, yes, I have it right here on this slide. If I get back to it.
Which they can't see anymore, but you can tell them.
I can tell them. Okay. Let me tell you. Senate Bill 167 is our bill that we submitted on behalf of because of the budget note and the partnership.
So you're having some of the same success I'm having with some bills. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know what your success is, Representative, but the House version of this same bill is House Bill 2735.
2735.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there other questions? Great. Seeing none, why don't you stay up, Bob, and we'll hear from Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Tobias Reed, State Representative for District 27. I'm just here to tell you a little story about my experience with the ESA this session and offer it for your consideration and perhaps, I hope, a preview of some greater levels of success in the future. I came to the conversation out of an interest in energy research, commercialization, innovation sorts of things. I'm fortunate to serve on the Oregon Innovation Council, which many of you know about, that's doing great things for our economy and economic development generally based on Oregon's competitive advantages. Among those is clearly energy. We have challenges with energy, but we also, as a state, are one of the few places that can be a natural laboratory in ways that are unmatched, I think, elsewhere in the country and in the world. We have the ability to use, create, develop, and advance solar, wind, geothermal, biomass, wave, all sorts of energy, and probably a lot that we don't yet know about. Oregon Inc. Helps connect the private sector and state government to do those things, particularly through our higher education system. But it has some difficulties because it tends to be among the last things we fund. And that means that it's not as able as I hope it might be someday to attract private sector involvement. The private sector isn't necessarily confident in our choices as a legislature as to whether we'll continue funding it. It also means that that Oregon Inc. and the signature research centers that are part of it are not as capable of attracting the top level talent that can make a difference. So those concerns brought me to an interest in trying to find some ways to develop directed funding for the energy activities of Oregon Inc. And through a series of conversations and investigations, it sort of came to the energy supplier assessment as an interesting mechanism. Appreciated the involvement of a variety of stakeholders, and to skip to the end for the moment, we weren't able to come to an agreement that met all the concerns of all the stakeholders. But there is an interesting opportunity there that the director alluded to with respect to how those dollars are directed to the benefit of those who pay, and the gap between what is currently being collected and what the statutory limit is on that assessment. So the bones of a potential proposal revolved around a better definition of how those dollars might be spent, and perhaps some movement in the cap, with some dollars being devoted to the energy activities of Oregon Inc. I maintain that those are to the benefit of those who pay, when we can increase our energy independence and security, when we can better control the energy that we use, when we can create it in state, keep the dollars in state. The billions of dollars that leave the state for energy every year does not accrue to our economic benefit. So that's really the place that I came into this discussion. There are obviously a lot of issues that are in play here, and I know that I didn't touch all of them, but that's some of what happened to me this session. And I do think that it's a worthy conversation to continue about how we can help the variety of people who deal with energy be more successful in the state, and how the state has a role to play with respect to research, development, commercialization that everyone will benefit from. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I also won't be offended if you just say thank you, that's interesting, and we move along.
Thank you, Representative Reed. That's rarely the case with this committee. Yeah. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, you alluded to this perhaps with Business Oregon, but if I understand this right, and I'm sure I don't, if we move Betsy in whatever form it may or may not be in, because I don't really understand what's going to happen to Betsy, to Business Oregon, won't that have a big effect on how we spend, what is spent from ESA funds on the department?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, I will certainly be eager to have the director correct me. I'm not sure how Senator Johnson will feel about your question, but beyond that, the Business Energy Tax Credit, I feel confident in saying,
I got that.
Will not move forward in its current form. Remember that there are actually three components of what's been the Business Energy Tax Credit, and I actually think that's a big part of what has led us to this problem, that people think of all of those three components as one thing. The manufacturing is the one that I think you're referring to, that we had the Joint Tax Credit Committee, on which I serve, sent to the floor a move of the manufacturing component to Business Oregon. I think that's right, and I support it. I'll be carrying it on the floor because I think that's very much an economic development strategy and initiative as opposed to an energy one. The conservation and generation portions of the Betsy remain under consideration in the Joint Tax Credit Committee. Whatever level and new structure that is associated with them, it will remain with the Department of Energy. So I think they're very different. But I also don't think, and here's where the director will correct me if I'm wrong, that's particularly related to the ESA and the funds that it generates, because the Betsy applications have a fee that are intended to cover the administration of that program. Have I got that?
Thanks, Mike. That's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything further? Thank you. Thank you. Director, stick around. You can sit a row behind. You can take a single step backwards, but no farther. We'll bring up Michael Early and Jeff Bissonnette to finish off this discussion from a ratepayer standpoint. And gentlemen, we thought it was important to hear from the folks who ultimately pay the ESA, that being the customers of utilities, and that's why you're here.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. My name is Michael Early. I'm the Executive Director of the Industrial Customers of Northwest Utilities. My members are large manufacturers and users of electricity in the state of Oregon. I have members that are served by Pacific Corp, Portland General, a variety of PUDs, municipal utilities, and co-ops, and all of them are subject to and pay this fee, which of course is passed on and recouped through us through our rates. In addition, a number of my members have generation within their own fence, and to the extent they make sales of that power themselves, they would be subject to this fee as well. So, as Chairman Cannon noted, we are ultimately the people who pay this fee, even though it's collected from the utilities. I guess our position would be basically I support the recommendations that the Department of Energy included in its December 2010 report to the legislature that came out of the advisory committee, and that is that the purposes for which this fee should be used are limited and constrained to those functions that are directly related to energy uses. And in particular, it's related to Energy Facility Siting Council, to implementation of the renewable portfolio system, and other such things. We have a concern if it begins to expand beyond those limited set of purposes and becomes a funding source for activities that are more remote or disconnected from the core activities of the entities from which this fee is collected. At that point, the fee begins to look more like a tax than a fee, frankly. And then a legitimate question is raised, is it appropriate to collect this charge from ratepayers, some of them struggling, frankly, in the current environment, in order to fund investments in new businesses. That's not to say that's not a laudable goal, but the question is that sounds like something for taxpayer money, not something for ratepayer money. But again, we support the Department of Energy's advisory committee. We'll be happy to participate that in the coming months as we continue to explore this issue. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Bissonnette, representing the Citizens Utility Board. We represent the residential ratepayers of IOU utilities, investor-owned utilities, so of electricity, natural gas, and telecommunications. And I guess I agree with some of what my colleague from the industrial side says. I think that we believe that the energy supplier assessment fee should be narrow, should be focused. But I think that we're willing to have a little bit of a broader conversation about, you know, what that focus is. I think we saw a number of bills that identified the ESA as a funding mechanism, and I think there was a little bit of a fear that there was sort of a run on the bank, as it were. And so we definitely agree that this is not a bottomless pit of money, but it is assessed on a group of companies and fuel sources and generators that is a pretty good cross-section of the energy industry. And so as we look at what there's fees on and what's taxes versus fees, we very much oppose fees that are assessed simply on, for instance, the ratepayers of, say, Pacific Power or Portland General Electric only funding general state purposes, and that is not appropriate for us. That's ratepayer money going for sort of general state needs, and we vigorously oppose those types of approaches. And as we take an example from what Representative Reed was talking about early on, there was a discussion to fund some R&D activities using public purpose dollars, which are assessed on PGE and PacifiCorp customers, and we were pretty clear that we opposed that. There was another idea to fund those types of activities on all electric customers in the state, and while we weren't wild about that, that's at least you're spreading that sort of burden across the state, and whether somebody lives in an IOU territory, investor-owned utility, private utility territory, or a consumer-owned utility territory, we thought that was at least within the legislature's authority to do. But then when the discussion turned toward looking at using the energy supplier assessment, we could support that because, again, it even went beyond electricity and went and hits renewables, hits petroleum, and when you're looking at doing sort of broad-based things on energy, that was a discussion that we could support and that we were willing to engage in, and we still are. And I guess I would like to endorse Representative Reed's comments about, we would like to see that this type of discussion continue in the interim. From the perspective of the Citizens Utility Board, the question we tend to ask is not how to keep rates low at all costs, but what is the value we get for our money? And we think that there is, we have supported increases for particular investments, particularly in energy efficiency, where you get long-term benefits from money that you spend today, even if it's a little bit more today. And if we can show that it saves money over time, that's a good investment. If we don't get value for the money that we spend, then we tend to oppose that sort of thing. So looking at the ESA, we still think that it ought to be limited. It's not a bottomless pot of money, but we're willing to engage because in discussions sort of using the ESA for purposes beyond simply funding the Department of Energy, because it is such a broad-based fee and fits so many people or sort of covers so many sectors of the industry, that it is an appropriate place to open up and continue a policy discussion. I'd be happy to answer questions. Thank you.
I have a question. I guess I want to broaden this at least a little. It seems to me where there's generally consensus is that the ESA is primarily designed to support the activities, the kind of ongoing activities of the Department of Energy. That was its intent. That's primarily how it's used, or entirely how it's used today. So I guess I wonder, is there work that the department should be doing to support Oregon's energy needs that it's not doing today? And I guess I'm fishing around a little bit for interim work for this committee or some other committee of this legislature to consider what we ought to be doing on energy. And maybe it shouldn't be through the department. I know there's sort of complicated interactions with the PUC and Department of Energy, but planning and policy development, support for additional efficiencies, reliability, renewables, is there some move we'd like the department to be making that would support your goals that may bear on this ESA top conversation only insofar as ESA would ultimately could support those efforts? That's maybe a bigger topic than you had planned to discuss.
I can address some of that. I think it's a good question, one that I'm not sure I can provide a whole answer to right now. But, for instance, there was a piece of legislation introduced on the Senate side to establish a commission for the Department of Energy, noting that the Department of Energy is one of the few agencies that doesn't have a commission. And the role of that commission would be to provide additional policy direction and increase in our view more accessible, more transparent rulemaking. The proposal there was to utilize energy supplier assessment funds for that purpose. That was something we thought we could support and wanted to do that. The governor is talking about a 10-year energy plan. I'm sure if that discussion moves forward that the Department of Energy will be square in the middle of that and may take some tasks from that are over and above what they are, or over and above what the agency has now. Is the energy supplier assessment fee an appropriate way to fund that additional activity? Again, that's a discussion we're willing to engage in. Lastly, I think that Representative Reed, in his interest with increasing research and development funds, that is not something that we want utilities to be investing in, but we need additional R&D. Again, we were willing to engage and support the consideration of the ESA for those types of purposes. Representative Reed was proposing that Oregon Inc. be a recipient of that. That seemed to be a good place to potentially get good value, and so we were willing to support that direction as well. And so I think that there are a lot of those types of discussions that are sort of rich for interim work, and we'd be happy to participate.
Thank you.
In terms of planning, on the electric side, that is handled under the OPUC, and we believe that program is robust and very, very useful at this point. It is, of course, is funded through fees that the utilities pay as well. So I don't see any need for, at least on the electric side, in terms of more planning activity. But on the Department of Energy side, I think it's become pretty apparent that the legislature and others would like a little more accounting or accountability about where, for example, the Betsy money has been spent. I think we've seen a lot of progress in that. We saw a report that just got filed earlier this month along those lines, and that's a good step forward. And if the Betsy program does go forward, which I certainly hope it does, I think that would be an area in which we would certainly be, if it required additional funding to better track that, and so we can make a better case for continuing that, that would be certainly something we could support.
Well, thank you both very much, and I neglected to include in that question possible things the department's doing now that it shouldn't be. If any of those come to mind, I think that would be fruitful for our discussion as well. Any other questions for this?
I've got one more.
Set, Representative King.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Thank you both for coming. This concludes our list of folks.
Yeah.
I'd be interested, and I may ask the director as well, but I'd be interested in your observations in this economic climate, fiscal restraints, et cetera. Do you expect the assessment to go up, to increase?
To clarify your question, absent any other activity or just because
where are we headed in the near future in your opinion?
Knee-jerk response, I think, without absent the any additional responsibility, absent some expanded level of activity from the department, or deciding the legislature deciding as a policy that we want to invest more in R&D through Oregon Inc. or some other body or some other mechanism, without the department making a pretty good case that it needs more, I think that we're at a decent place. And so I wouldn't expect, and I guess this is more a personal view than anything else, that we'd be in line to see large increases.
Now, we would hope that it remain flat, and I would expect it would remain flat. Frankly, I don't see anything on the horizon near term, particularly in the current economic environment, that would suggest that agency ought to take on some substantial new task at the expense to ratepayers.
Well, thank you both very much, and we will be talking with each other and with the committee about interim topics, and this may be one we return to. So,
thank you.
Keep watching. With that, we will close the informational meeting on the ESA. And with my co-chair's permission, open a work session on Senate Bill 82A.
Absolutely. I'm in agreement.
So we're in work session on Senate Bill 82A. Members, we have an amendment. It's a -5 amendment. I don't know if Polly's in the room.
She had to go to another committee.
She had to go.
Mr. Dewey is her backup.
Yeah. I mean, Mike, do you want to... We heard testimony on this issue. I had the amendment drafted after meeting with Holly. I think she's met with a number of other committee members as well. Her concern was that because these additional covered devices, namely printers and other peripherals, are unlikely to contain the kind of toxins that concerned us with monitors and CPUs in the original bill, a landfill ban on those devices was inappropriate. The -5s, assuming they were drafted correctly, and I've read them, and I believe they were, the -5s would exempt the additional covered items, computer peripherals and printers, the ones we're adding with Senate Bill 82, they would exempt them from the landfill ban. And I'm getting a nod from Jonathan. That's your understanding of the amendment. Mike?
Well,
you better come up if you have anything to say.
Yeah, nods are okay, but you got to come up.
Thank you, Mike Dewey, representing Waste Management. Ms. Sears was very good at providing information at the last hearing about the concerns regarding the ban. And I think there is an opportunity, if this amendment goes forth, this doesn't go until 2015, as I recall, this section. And so having said that, there can always be a discussion about standards, and we wanted to have that discussion anyway. So we think it's appropriate, based upon toxicity standards, in that these peripherals don't have that, that there not be the ban. So with that, we would hope the committee would approve the amendment, and the bill goes forward, and we do support the bill.
Great. Thank you, Mike. Any questions or any discussion? I guess we could take a motion on the Dash 5s. Mr. Kocher.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 82-A, dated May 19, 2011.
Representative Gilliam moves the Dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 82-A, dated May 19, 2011. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? The amendments are adopted. Mr. Chair?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Senate Bill 518 as...
82.
Yes, and I'd just like to strike that and say, did I say that on the last bill?
I think you did okay on the last one.
I'm so sorry. Let me start over, Mr. Chair, with a new motion. I move Senate Bill 82A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay. Representative Gilliam moves Senate Bill 82 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there discussion?
Thank you for that.
And Representative Gilliam.
Just a quick note, did we make an announcement about chewing gum in our committee room?
No. Would you like to make that now?
I would. I prefer that no one chew gum, particularly when their bill is up.
They're all swallowing their gum quickly.
Then that's all I have.
All right. With that, Sue, will you call the roll?
Representative Bailey?
Aye. Excuse me?
Representative Benz?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Excused?
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Boone?
Aye.
Co-Chair Gilliam?
Aye.
Co-Chair Kim?
Aye. Motion carries. Senate Bill 82A will go to Ways and Means. And with that, we will close the penultimate committee meeting for this Committee on Energy, Environment, and Water. Committee is adjourned.
Nicely done.
Yeah.
Good work.
We're back in session. It's in order for the purpose of carrying over Senate Bill 518 to Tuesday. And we are closed. We'll hope remote.